What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot, your favorite podcast about agriculture. Just kidding. It's about Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot. And with your hosts, Robbie the Wagner and Charles William Carpenter III.
William. I'm always adding some effect.
Yeah. Always got to interrupt me. Our guest today is B. Dougie. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for the invite. Happy to get into whiskey with y'all.
Yeah.
Happy to share it.
Oh,
with
and whatnot as well, I guess I should say. Web and whatnot.
Of course.
That's right. We'll trickle our way there eventually.
So for folks who have maybe not heard of you, can you give us a few sentences about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So my birth name is Brian Douglas, but I do go by B. Dougie on the internet. Previously worked at GitHub for almost 5 years, and now I run a pizza company, opensauce.pizza, where we're doing insights into open source projects.
That just makes me want to ask, as a proprietor of a pizzeria, Pizzolo is what you are, I guess, what style of pizza do you prefer?
This might ruffle feathers, but I guess I'll just... Detroit-style pizza is like, it's something that I really enjoy, the sort of focaccia-type bread and the crispy edges and everything about it I love. So shout out to Little Caesars, who got me into that when I was like a kid. But yeah, nowadays I think it's like, it's been like a specialty out here in like San Francisco. People, some of like the more hipster shops are doing the Detroit-style pizza, which has been nice to see.
Yeah, that stuff is delicious and full of so much yummy fat. I love how they like crisp up cheese on the bottom and butter. It's like all the good parts. That was a good answer. All right, Brian. So let's talk a little about this whiskey though. Let's grease the wheels. So today we're having the Teeling Whiskey, single pot still, Wonders of Wood series, first edition, Virgin Chinkapin, Oak Irish Whiskey. Yeah, I don't even know if I can say all those things. That looks sweet.
Just doing that for the video.
Yeah, I love it. That's all we need is a still of that. That's pretty solid. I might have to steal that in the future. So this was the winner of the World's Best Pot Still Whiskey at the 2022 World Whiskies Competition. So that's kind of setting it up for
sounds
winner.
Fancy.
100 proof. I couldn't find anything about age statements, and there's no kind of laws around Irish whiskey, but it's usually younger whiskey, like 2 to 4 years, unless it has an age statement on it. Mash bill is just 50% malted barley and 50% unmalted barley. So a little malt, a little less malt. Yeah. I don't know.
Mix it up.
So yeah, let's get to it. Yeah, mix the malts.
I feel like I need to pour this next to that.
Yeah. Oh.
It's like such a nice sound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people have asked, like, do you just insert those sounds? They're like, no, this is like, we pour it right here.
Yeah, we just get close to the mic, apparently. It's the bridge to my career in Foley, you know? I mean, I've always wanted to be a Foley artist.
With the writer's strike, I think you might have a role.
Yeah, there you go. They're searching
some underground
for talent.
Foley work. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, going to give it a little smell here. It almost has like a little like mildew to it. Mm.
That's the unmalted. I don't know.
I think I smell some malt. I don't know. As a kid, I remember going to like the little ice cream thing in the summer. And you know, they had like, you could get a shake or a malt. And I never really understood the differences in those two.
Malt is like a powder. I forget what it's made of. It's malted something.
It's like a thickening agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like milk powder sort of thing or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. Something like that. I don't know. But this smells nothing like that. It smells like, I smell a little bit of mango. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, I was going to say like orange or some sort of citrus.
Or maybe like an apricot, like a dry apricot. That's an ongoing
joke. We give him a lot of shit because he always says apricot.
No, it actually has a little bit of like a lemon in the finish for me. And I don't know, this is going to sound ridiculous. It reminds me a little bit of like a spring morning, right? So I'm getting a little bit of like floral and mildew, like, you know, there's like the mildew in the morning.
It's like if you had some Gain laundry detergent, I mean. Like that.
Yeah, well, that's probably a little too strong, but it's very interesting. Actually, it's different than most Irish whiskeys that I've tried. All right, well, Brian, I'll give you the breakdown. I'm sure you're an avid listener of the show, but just in case you've forgotten, we have a very loose rating system. It's 1 to 8 tentacles. Based on, of course, an octopus, 1 being I hate this and never want to have it again, 8 being like, this is amazing, I will put down every other bottle and keep reaching for this one. And then obviously, you know, 4 is just fine. I usually try to, like in this instance, I'm comparing it to other Irish whiskeys. But in general, if you want to just compare it to a whiskey that you like, that you would get on a regular basis for sipping, and then kind of maybe give it that kind of context.
I think it's like it definitely has a bit more flavor than I would probably expect from Irish whiskey. I went to Ireland and did the whole like whiskey tour, and kind of like Jameson, more like leaving Ireland than I did going to Ireland. Jameson's like a smooth, like you can mix it with other stuff. This, I don't think I'd probably mix it with other stuff. So I guess like a 6 out of 8.
Yeah. I think that's I definitely
would finish the bottle. I don't know if I'd go and like reach for another bottle, but like send me more of these and I'll keep drinking them.
Fair enough. That's a pretty good, if we can lock down that Teeling sponsorship, then I'm down to share the wealth. That's a really good point too, though, actually. So this one is on the pricier side, given it's like a limited edition and everything else. I also like Jameson, and I've been to the Jameson, the Jemmy distillery in Dublin. I kind of came away too, like thinking initially, like it was pretty basic whiskey when I went in, and then I came out and got to really try like the full array of options that they have. And I was like, oh yeah, they've got some great stuff there. I think they have like a 15 year. That's like fantastic, actually. So given that context and the price of this one, I think I would, I don't know, I'm kind of between a 6 and a 7. So they have a Teeling that's finished in rum barrels too, that is like delicious. And that one has probably like a bit more range and stuff to it. But this is, yeah, I'm going to go 7. YOLO.
I would say this tastes like a slight bit scotchy, like a little bit like a scotch light to me. So it's not quite as Irishy as I would have expected. That being said, I think it has a lot of good flavors going for it. It doesn't have any of the things that I dislike about scotch. So I think in terms of other Irish whiskeys, this one's a little more interesting. I think I would go 7 as well. I think it's pretty good for the Irish ones we've tried so far.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, again, malted, yeah, like a single malt, right? That'll be the kind of, and this has those similar things in the mash bill, and then different distillation process with Irish ones. This one I think is a single pot still. Jameson will actually use like a triple still, and they'll like triple distill it over and make it like cleaner and cleaner, which is kind of nice and interesting, but does make for a kind of a light whiskey.
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a light whiskier. I'm a big fan of I don't know if y'all spend a lot of time at bars.
Sometimes.
No judgment. But yeah, I do like a Jameson, and ginger beer is like my go-to when out at like a happy hour. Nice, refreshing end of the day, did a long talk, just want to relax.
Yeah, that would sound pretty refreshing. I was going to ask you, like, kind of what's your go-to, and guess we got there. That's probably why we picked an Irish one, maybe, you know? I don't know.
Here we go. Like, maybe yeah, it's my Irish first name and my Scottish last name. You know, it was in my name, at least. Maybe not my roots, but the name, at least.
Yeah, Robbie was inspired by that. Yeah, I don't know if you gave him feedback or whatever. I wake up and whiskey shows up at my house sometimes, and I know Robbie's gone on a shopping spree and he's planning. So that's just the nature of the game, you know. I'm just the talent,
Foley artist, and also whiskey receiver.
Yeah, exactly. Professional whiskey tester. I like to tell people. I should put that on my LinkedIn. Should help me for my future. So before we get into the web part, we usually ask our guests like some of the same questions, taking
hot
into account,
takes.
You know. Hot takes from the stuff people are arguing about on Twitter, you know, which is kind of funny. But so I guess we'll start with, you know, top of the list. Do you use TypeScript or plain JavaScript?
I've been a full-on TypeScript person for a year now. It was a meme for a while where people would be like, oh, this needs to be TypeScript, and people would open the issue but never do anything about it. And then it started where people started actually opening up PRs, converting your entire code base to TypeScript in the open source world. You receive whiskey, I receive TypeScript. So someone converted my entire project to TypeScript, and I went with it. And
nice.
I've never looked back since.
Do you use inferred types or explicit types? Or do you prefer one or the other?
That's a good question. Leaning more towards inferred. I had a chance to, and maybe you've actually had Josh Goldberg on here, but had a chance to talk to him on a podcast. Kind of learned how to do proper TypeScript like 6 months ago. But yeah, inferred a lot of stuff, and I appreciate libraries that do more work for me. So I can just import, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I don't want to write everything out. I'm lazy.
And you kind of want to trust the intention of the library maintainer to a degree. I mean, if they're providing them, then overriding that could like really screw with whatever you're expecting from their, you know, APIs or whatever.
Tailwind or vanilla CSS?
Oh man, I like I'm the product of I don't know, random YouTubers telling me what to use. I use Tailwind. Probably also maybe like 18 months ago, started a new project, wanted to try it out, and never looked back after that project took off.
That's the only one has a right answer, because Tailwind is the right answer. But anyway,
right.
Go on to the next one, Chuck. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, some people would say it depends, but you do you. You know, Robbie has the Tailwind socks and stickers everywhere, and I think he's on Adam's payroll. I don't know. Git Rebase or Git Merge?
Oh, man. This one I'll go to bat for. Rebase. I'm Rebase all the way. I've definitely worked with a lot of hairy libraries and like longstanding project with tons of history. And yeah. Keep the merge commits out of my life. That'd be great.
I feel that same way for the most part, too. I'm also, though, like a good, like us being in the consulting world for a bit, I also try to be like a good guest. So it's sort of like, yes, I want Rebase, but I'm not going to go to bat and fight an existing team because, you know, it's not affecting the product necessarily, or, you know, that kind of from a usability standpoint. But, you know, when you have to fix something and read things, it's nicer. I prefer it. If I'm in charge, then I would go that direction. But if I'm not, I'm a good guest.
So I used to work at GitHub for a long time. Got started right before the Actions was like a feature that shipped. So my entire release orchestration is all built in the idea of Rebase and squashing as well, which is another sort of contention for a lot of folks. But we do merge commits to the main branch just so the releases can get cut. But every single commit in the merge has history. And then we generate a bunch of change logs and stuff like that. So yeah, it's to make the bots happy, this Rebase, and everything will work out in the end.
So, well, then we go back to it depends.
Yeah.
But if you're working in a PR brand, you know, working in a PR branch and that kind of thing, like doing Rebases and just making sure that like things are inserted without extra things. And I know Robbie will say, well, you can squash merge and then you get all that out of there. But
well,
it's still kind of cleaner. And I like the insertion to make sure like the insertion of time is kind of correct.
Yeah. If you're cutting releases, you shouldn't squash and merge into that, like for that process, because people right. do that and then try to merge it back into main or something and you get like, boom, like it doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess it truly does depend, because we have like a whole beta main alpha branch systems. Everything goes to beta first and then we cut a beta release. Then we do a merge commit from beta to main. But the game is like, never don't mess that strategy up, because main just gets all the commits inserted. And the only reason we do a merge commit at that point is because we don't want to cut a new release at the time of the thing getting merged. And that's how we use semantic release as well. So everything's triggered based on conventional commits system.
So what do you think about signals?
Signals? Oh man, I guess they exist. I've read a couple blog posts from, who is it? Mishko from Quick. Or Builder.io, creator of Angular. And actually, one of the guys who works with me, head of engineering, Brandon, I think is exploring adding signals to his analog framework. So the guy who runs engineering for open source, he has a open source framework that uses Vite and Angular to kind of modernize that stack a bit. I haven't put too much like emphasis or energy into really caring about that. One day someone will tell me this would be the best thing ever. Someone will tell me we should use it, kind of like hooks in React. One day I woke up and someone told me I should use that, and I did. And TypeScript was also very similar, even though it took like 10 years for that to happen. And when signals is a thing, well, it is a thing now, but when someone's like, oh yeah, Brian, we should add signals to our code base, I'm like, oh, okay, sure.
Right, right. You decide to try a project that's running Solid.js or, like you said, Quick or whatever else, then I guess you'll dive in at that point.
Yeah, and honestly, I haven't built anything in Solid yet. I've been meaning to... Like, I guess I'm now at a point, just like summertime, which you start a side project because the kids are upstairs and you got to like, you need a couple hours. So let's go right. build something. Nice. So maybe I built something with signals this summer.
I don't think we mentioned that you also have a podcast.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I have a few. So I have got the Secret Sauce, which is the podcast we started when I left GitHub to do open source full time. Here's a secret sauce for starting a company. Don't ship any code. Just go talk to your future customers. Then you'll eventually know what you should build. So we did that. And then previous to that, I started a podcast at Netlify, my previous employer, called Jamstack Radio. And that's exactly what it sounds like. We just talk to a bunch of Jamstack people about Jamstack. And then we ship podcasts every other week.
All righty. So how did you find yourself into that path from developer to developer experience and developer advocacy?
I got a finance degree in 2008, had no job because of the last recession, went to sales, got my MBA. While getting my MBA, I learned how to code because I thought, oh, I should build a business from code with no overhead. And then that turned into like startup work. Worked in, as an engineer at a bunch of startups in San Francisco. At Netlify's where really they asked me, because I was doing a bunch of like podcasting and blogging because that was a way for me to like stay up to speed on what I could learn next. And then Netlify asked me if I could go full time to do that. And I told them no. And then 12 months later, we hired our second front-end engineer. And they asked me again. I was like, oh, cool, I'll do it full time. And it was like 9 months later, GitHub asked me to work at GitHub. So I joined there as like first advocate ever at GitHub in 2018. And built out a developer relations team, and that was fun. And now I am not doing that anymore.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. I know that it brings to mind that like how new that position in general is, you know, developer advocacy and developer experience, developer relations, those are kind of all meshed together in different ways. And I'm sure every company kind of has their own description of what that job looks like. But to a degree, yeah, right, you're like helping people through issues, get comfortably familiar with the tools and documentation available to them and just kind of be a partner in what they're building. Would that be?
Yeah, it's yeah. So I joined Netlify because they saw me using Netlify. So I was employee number three and they're like, hey, you should come and work here. And I was like, sure. The company I was working at was not doing very well. So I was like, let me just take a chance at yet another startup. The benefit of that experience was I just knew how to use Netlify very well, like really good, and was like building the features for other people to use Netlify like also well. So the thing that turned me into a developer experience, which Netlify kind of like was one of the first, like there are other teams and everyone's kind of relations. They were one of the teams that were shipping code and doing the advocate side, which like the developer experience role. Sarah Drasner joined like right after I left. Whole other story there, but like she was like already about to join. I'm like, I kind of got to go to GitHub. It's going to be a great time, but Sarah's awesome too. So like I was the first team member to split time and do both roles and be the experience person. And then Sarah came in, I left, and then she kind of built the team around that experience. So she had way more knowledge. Like I give her all the claim to fame for building the great team that Netlify was for developer experience. But it definitely was a trend that you see more and more companies are like, yeah, we want our advocates to ship a bunch of code and ship features and talk about those features. Because at the end of the day, the advocate role has been around for a while. It didn't really get like prominence till like 2015, 2016. And then you see the evolution of that, and now more and more companies want an advocate earlier and earlier in their trajectory. And I think it proves it's a good role to have people who can talk to developers and ship code.
Yeah, I think that's it right there. I think you touched on it, is that it's not that these are responsibilities that are brand new to our industry. It's that it's been recognized as not necessarily just part of a product team's responsibilities, that perhaps it deserves a more dedicated role and multiple and teams at a certain scale. But yeah, I think it's kind of like when people talk about like DevOps, right? Like it's not that DevOps is new in the last 10 years. It's just we called it something different a while ago. And maybe we had shifted those responsibilities and kind of, you know, shared it across a product team or whatever else. And then I think we're discovering that there's some inefficiencies around that. Can't do everything super well. And we care about DX more in general. I guess that's the other aspect of it.
Yeah, and you see a lot of companies that care about it earlier on tend to hit like a stride. And I think Superbase comes to mind. I don't know if I've heard anybody on Superbase on the podcast yet, but you should definitely get them on. They just have a really good experience around how they ship features, how they talk about the features, how they engage community. Oh, Superbase has been around since 2020. So like within 3 years, now they've built a model where everyone wants to do a launch week because there's so much success around how they operate and how they just kind of, they trust their users by giving them quality content and quality interactions. There was a time where I cite Firebase, so I don't mean to speak ill of Firebase, but like when they got acquired by Google, everything changed. We had like perfect documentation to now it's like sterile. It checks the boxes, but doesn't really help you. And you see a shift in the industry away from Firebase, or people still use it. But if you use Flutter, I guess you still use Firebase pretty heavily, but not so much in the world that I operate in.
People who are in open source or people that are trying to like build some early products or just do POCs and that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that whole experience like massively deteriorated like post acquisition. And Unfortunately, it probably fell victim to what Google does sometimes. They acquire, they try a few things, and then they lose interest if it doesn't like catch fire, pun intended, immediately. So I love how Supabase stepped in and provided like great docs, great experience. They're also like telling you, we offer you a cloud version, you can self-host, you can like, there's a lot of different things too. So they make like a change in architecture not super challenging, and vendor locking and things like that too. And like people just respect that, and then they're willing to pay the bill because they're like, great, I'm not trapped.
And I think they're a good case study for anyone who's thinking, oh, just copying someone else is not a good thing to do. They, you know, took a lot of ideas from Firebase and just got rid of the shitty stuff and made it nice. And do that as your next startup. Find something that's pretty good, but you can, you know, make some changes to.
Something that was great that got shittier and then bring it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to bring back GeoCities. Are you going to do MySpace?
There you go. Yeah, I'll do MySpace.
I feel like we're seeing, everyone complains about like how many Spider-Mans have we seen or Batman origin stories and movies we've seen, but it's the same thing in a web where I'm seeing like, well, they haven't shipped this yet, but GeoCities is coming back. There's a company I talked to recently, and everyone's trying to make it easier for people to get on the internet and on the web because now it's trivial. But now we've got this new Apple Vision that just came out yesterday. Now that the world will be, okay, how can I, well, we thought it was the metaverse. Now it's this Apple thing. Who knows? Like I have low expectations with this device. $3,500 to look through some glass. Also, I wear glasses, so who knows how that's going to work. But yeah, the world will be GeoCities on Apple Vision. That's the tagline. That's the title of this podcast.
I like it. I like where this has gone. I mean, we should definitely give open source, you know, it's just due, but also we can just talk about tech at large in general. I did see that. I probably have higher expectations than you do out of this. I just love the idea that like, no matter where I'm at, I can have like as many large screens as I want. I don't need three monitors. I can have three monitors or one one.
That's a good point.
Or when you're like traveling and you want to, you know, watch kind of like a big screen experience. They are dorky looking. I mean, let's be honest. They're kind of like goofy looking. You're going to see people walking around with these damn things.
What's the resolution like? Because if you can get rid of like monitors, it's a bargain. Like it's an XDR is what, $7,000? Like,
yeah. So if you can get like 6K or even just 4K kind of level stuff, this could be pretty interesting. They got to still like step up the gaming aspect of it though. And they talked about that a little bit, but you know, just watching, you know, Star Wars on the road isn't going to be enough for me. The gaming aspect would be pretty cool.
We had an engineer starting in 2 weeks. We hired our fourth employee at OpenSauces recently. So I'm just going to pat myself on the back. But then we're shipping Apple devices, and then we're also shipping a new monitor to this person. And like I've got like a 34-inch like LG widescreen or whatever. If you want a 38-inch, it's like $1,200. If you want an Apple Cinema display, it's like, what? I don't know what the number is, but a laptop is $4,500. So I guess if productivity is improved, or if you want to like code on the back of your wall or your ceiling or whatever, maybe that's a win. It'd be nice not to carry this laptop upstairs and just throw on some goggles. But yeah, we'll see. If Apple, if you offer discount coupon codes, please send one my way. And I would love to try it out.
Yeah, there you go. That's very kind of you. I'm sure Tim's going to, he listens to this, and so I'm sure he's going to hit you up.
Oh, shout out to Tim Apple.
Yeah, that's right. It is an interesting thing, though, like the first time an employee says, I don't want any of those monitors. I want these goggles. That's my monitors, and I'm going to save you money long term. I don't know. I'll get a cheaper laptop and do the overall expense. I don't know. Yeah, it could be interesting. I mean,
so
well,
GitHub had the benefit. So GitHub's always been like remote first company, despite the fact that they're closing their offices this year. It was always, where do you want your desk to be? And I chose, when I joined, my desk was at home. So they bought me a desk, they bought me a chair, a monitor. And it's like, you choose, you pick. The Microsoft world made it a little more, here's the machine you get type of deal. But pre-Microsoft world, it was nice because it was $1,000 for a desk was the limit. So people were going to like West Elm and getting like really, really nice furniture because they didn't need a monitor. They just wanted like the full expense to be the desk. I feel like I'm outing GitHub employees now. There's going to be an audit. Like, okay, let's see what you spent the money on. But yeah, that was the truth of the matter. Like, you just got to pick the desk you want, pick the machine you wanted, and just do your job in the best situation.
Yeah, like happy, like you can nickel and dime employees, or you can help make them happy and loyal. And I feel like having them comfortable in their working environment where they're going to spend a ton of time is a good investment. At the end of the day, like, who cares? If they told you, like, you can spend $1,000 on a desk and you can spend $1,500 on a monitor, and you're like, I don't need a monitor, I'm going to spend $2,500. I mean, it's the same total, right? Like, those are the line items. That's a total. Who cares? That's what I think. So you're not outing anyone in my mind, but who knows? I guess if a GitHub accountant calls you up and says, I'd like some names, sir.
Not to throw shade, but they all got laid off in the last layoff. So we're good.
Yeah. Womp womp. All right. Well, let's talk about current company, opensauce.pizza, Detroit Pizza.
I've spent a lot of time in the open source world. When I did DevRel at GitHub, I met with all the open source maintainers that we've all heard of, got to become friends with them. And there was like a consistent theme of like missing opportunity or missing feature on GitHub, in particular the insight tab. So inside of repository, you see insights and it's there, it exists, but most people will find an underwhelming experience. So what I've sought out there to is build a whole product around GitHub Insights. I saw you had Fred from Astro on. Like, I told Fred this a couple years ago, like, Astro 2021 first quarter, number one project for new contributors. That's data that everyone should know across the industry. Like, if you want to be an open source contributor, like, where are people contributing? Where is success happening? So that's what we're seeking to do, and also support enterprises and understanding like tech debt and understanding where code contributions. So TLDR is like, we take Git commits and we turn those into insights.
Oh, nice. Okay, so I hadn't really considered that context of things. So in an enterprise environment, you can still do similar analysis, and it's just based on private repos and give them a little bit of some insight around productivity.
Correct, yeah. And like, we want to move away from the big brother like tools that exist. So there's a lot of them out there, which tells you if you've done like 3 or 4 PRs this week. And if you haven't done it, then you have to like write up a report on the way, what you were doing other than shipping PRs, which encourages the wrong thing. Like, you don't want to count 10 small PRs versus the one giant behemoth PR. Please don't ship giant behemoth PRs. Let's break this up, people. But the idea there is like, we want to measure what's going well, which is open source. Like, people come together to do a thing, even if they're getting paid or not. Like, they're all working for the same cause. And if you can have that same energy at your enterprise or at your young startup, like, we should be able to like rebuild that experience. So open source first is where we're focused on supporting open source, but like, we have a pathway into and supporting enterprises really soon.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult metric to consider and give like reasonable feedback about, because on one hand, it's kind of like story points or any of those things, right? Like, what you mentioned is you can game the system. If you know the rules, you can game the system. And is it really valuable at that point? And also, you're just trying to micromanage people and you want to like get away from that as well. You just want to see like what's really happening in the code and what's working and what's not. It made me think of Code Climate right away, right? That's one of those that was like trying to utilize productivity metrics and what's happening. And I just saw it get skewed though by leadership. People higher up in the leadership tree and then start to like look at velocity, look at these Code Climate metrics and be like, oh, how do we do more, ship more? Well, yes and no, maybe these things can help you, but story points are just never meant for leadership. And then the other things started to like get gamed. Like, if you slap someone on the wrist because they're not doing the couple of things that they cue as success within those metrics, then people will be like, great, well, I don't want to hear that again. So now I will split up and do 10 tiny PRs.
During the pandemic, there was I don't know if people actually did this, but it was a meme on TikTok where you just like wiggle your mouse on a call. So that way it would just show that you're still working. So you're just sitting watching Netflix and stuff like that, and you have to go like wiggle your mouse for a bit. So people created devices to wiggle the mouse for you.
Yeah, and scripts I saw in like a subreddit or something, and people wrote some like scripts. You can have an Apple script or whatever, and it would like trigger that motion or whatever to like make sure it was always awake.
I won't mention specifically this person, but a person that's close to me family-wise works at a fintech. And they had an issue where I think they actually signed into their IT account on their machine. And it like was a whole like question around, hey, what's happening on your machine? Security alerted that this happened. It was like, no, I just signed into the wrong account, like using this sort of inertia, signed in the wrong thing. But at a fintech, it makes a lot of sense. You want to have security and that, but like when it comes to Big Brother, like making sure you're at your machine during core hours and make sure you have the right server, like you're not scrolling through Facebook or Twitter all day. Like, that becomes a little interesting.
Yeah. Interesting is one way to classify it. I think it's like a massive lack of trust, and the same thing that we're talking about around having a comfortable work environment. Well, you know, this is about environment as well. And if you feel like you're untrusted and being monitored and every second must be productive, the misnomer that our work is typing characters, right? Like that it's only that there's not a thinking or a research component or things that aren't like sitting in front of your computer all the time. It's not reasonable. So what is the output you're getting? You know, you should be talking about successful output and business objectives. Are you hitting those things? Then who fucking cares if they're on Facebook or whatever else?
Yeah, so we lucked out. We got two interns from the internship program from GitHub. I'm still pretty well connected with GitHub, even though I left. I like to say I'm kind of a big deal there. But yeah, so we had two interns, and basically 3 weekends ago, I built like AI features, just like everyone else is doing. OpenAI embedded to the product, generative summaries on pull request. Half built it like on a Saturday, and it was like, hey, interns, take this along for the ride. And they've like just kind of ran with it. I've been cleaning up some stuff and like writing some tests and doing some other random things. The majority of the work's happening through interns that are still in college. And all I do is like review PRs. So like if I had like Big Brother watching me and be like, hey, Brian, you're not really doing any work. You're just like commenting on PRs and stuff like that. I'd be like, yeah, well, look at the output. Like I've got folks who are frankly paid less than I am to do way more work than I can. Like hopefully we can give them a great job after the fact, like down the road. But in reality, it's like now I've scaled the team 2x, and now I'm a 3x developer at this point.
Yeah, that's amazing, because at that point you're a technical lead and you're guiding the work to ensure that it maintains standards and they're learning along the way. Like that is still a job necessary within projects. Exactly like you were saying, is that, oh yeah, you're not contributing code. Are you a failure? Well, no, you know, clearly not, because you're the team is in it together and you are ensuring that they are successful, right? And that is quality and all of those things are accounted for along the way. I'm curious, because your product is built around missing metrics within GitHub. Do you have plans ever in the future to like support other like GitLab?
Yeah, Git host providers. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I sought out to start that way. It is 100% like everything look on the site today is all GitHub focused, but that's not really our limitation. The limitation is really that's what all the open source code is happening. But GitLab, if you're listening, I do have an email out to you. Like, definitely respond to that. We had a conversation late last year, but because GitLab's Git-based, like, we can do the same analysis and insights into the same product. Like, we're still pretty early. Like, I left GitHub in September. We had a product shipped by December, ready to use, roughly. And then we've just done a lot of conversations with large enterprises and customers about, like, what's missing, how can we ship that? And, like, we're just now at the point where we're now shipping the next version of the product to be able to say, okay, you can use this for your team, for discovering open source, for sourcing developers. So the goal is to eventually like be able to support GitLab and Bitbucket and any self-hosted enterprise that wants to use this as well. Like your internal insights are very similar to what we can show on the dashboard. And I'm super excited to hopefully, well, I don't want to put a date on it. Not shipping code. I'm basically a product manager now. And what I've learned as a product manager is never put a date on it. So let's say Q3, we have something we can showcase and share with folks.
You heard it here, folks. By September of this year, it'll be fully baked. This pizza will
fully
be ready.
Ready to go,
Detroit style.
And we'll have your coupon, or we'll give free pizza to everyone just to divert all the bad press.
Yeah, there you go. You have a coupon for free pizza. That if you see a bug, you get free pizza.
Yeah. Actually, you know, back in the day, I don't know if you guys went to school in the States. We would read books in the summer and you get a Pizza Hut party or whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
We'd love to incorporate that in open source around contributions. So instead of getting like free t-shirts from digital, like Hacktoberfest, wouldn't you rather have like a personal pan pizza instead?
Totally.
That's pretty cool. Okay, a couple of questions. Well, and this is non-tech, but I'm just curious. What part of Florida did you grow up in?
In the suburbs of Tampa.
So
just, off the Tampa Road, if anybody's listening. I say that because I keep running into people who are from the same area as me, which I find completely fascinating. But, yeah.
That's cool. My brother lives in St. Pete, so I'm a little bit familiar. You know, go there.
Yeah, this is other side across the bay. Yeah, that's...
Gotcha. Yeah,
small world.
Chris Kreider lived in Tampa, right?
Oh, did he?
I think. Or where was he? Was somewhere in Florida. Who? Chris Coyer.
Oh, yeah. They were in Florida for a little bit. He's from Wisconsin.
Yeah, he has a very Midwestern accent, but see, I know American accents. I just don't know Canadian ones.
Right. And especially when they get close to the border, they start to kind of blend together. So you're like, are you from Minnesota or are you from Canada? I don't know, eh?
That was
you
pretty
like
convincing.
Hockey? Yeah. Well, you know, that's my third career. I want to do some voice work.
Excellent.
I could, let's see. I need to drink more of this whiskey and then I can maybe do a proper Irish accent. have a bit of a dram here, eh?
That's better than my my short stint at Australian. That was not too good.
Yeah, I don't even touch that one. That one's a rough one. Like hard. I feel like it's hard, but it's like so obvious. Like you know when you meet an Australian, you're like, oh yeah, shrimp on the barbie. But it always ends up going like kind of British and kind of
that was Irish. Right
really,
there.
Just yeah, exactly. See, I just can't. Well, once I put myself in one of those like more challenging.
You see, my
voices,
Australian accent goes it goes into pirate talk pretty quickly.
Right, because
like
right.
It's a lot of righty mates and stuff like that. It just turns into arg and stuff like that. So
arg mate.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and stop that now.
You'll have to switch to drinking rum. It'll be a whole change in branding. Like, yeah. You can't really relate pirates and pizza together, even though, you know, it's kind of close phonetically or something else. This really devolved, didn't it?
I don't know how we got to pirates and pizza.
I can go. Yeah, exactly. Pizza Hut, making it great. That was their old thing.
You probably don't remember
Robbie. You know, did you know that Robbie is only 21?
That is
it's
not
ridiculous.
True. That's
he looks
not
much
true.
Older.
Oh, happy birthday.
So he doesn't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm 32. Basically the same to you, I guess. But
well, and then the other burning question, and this could start to go into what 90 things, but I don't know. I bet someone's asked you this before, but I'm just wondering, could you teach me how to Dougie?
I can. Yeah. You take two cans and you pour one in the other one. And then you sort of two-step with it.
Oh.
It's hard. I'm like sitting down, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing. Like that was my college years was the Dougie. And I taught people how to Dougie all through my years at GitHub.
That's
still teaching
funny.
People. Actually, that's my newsletter. Teach me how to Dougie. I haven't shipped a newsletter since last year, but I was doing a DevEx newsletter for a while.
Oh, that's cool. I'll sign up if you bring it back. I love the title alone. And I also realized that I'm not that clever, so, you know.
You like, didn't expect the whole teach me how to Dougie for dummies?
Yeah, and you gave a good visual, though, because I know, like you're saying, you're seated, and but the way you described it, it was like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So, okay, you said you have two ongoing podcasts currently, right? The one for OpenSauced, and then the Jamstack has been going on for a little bit. An interesting thing, because people ask us often, and I feel you're like way more experienced in this thing. It's sort of like for those that want to try to start a podcast, like what's the first thing? What do you think is the most important first thing in starting a podcast?
Book seven guests or book record seven episodes. I think that's the kind of the rule of thumb for a lot of people is like seven's kind of the drop off for people. It's like you do seven and then it either succeeds or fails. Cause like if you do seven or you do eight, you're probably gonna do 100. But if you do six, you're probably never going to do a recording ever again. The one thing I learned pretty early on is like, don't ship any of them until you hit number six and then start releasing when you had six in the can. So just start recording. It doesn't have to be perfect because chances are people aren't going to listen to the first one. Actually, chances are they're probably listening to the first 10 when they discover your podcast. Like, oh, yeah, this is great. I'm going to listen to all of them on my drive down to Sarasota or whatever or to the beach. So my thing is like, just do it. If it doesn't work out, use all that knowledge and start a new one. Rename it, rebrand it, create a new URL, and just like act like it never happened. I started a podcast when I first learned how to code called This Developing Story because like the startup podcast came around the same time. And the startup podcast is like Gimlet, which has been acquired by Spotify, the whole trajectory of how they started up the startup. And he would just record like short vignettes of like his experience of quitting his job and doing the next thing. And then it turned into listening to other startups, how their story went. And then it got bigger and bigger. But the first couple like the episodes were like, they were okay. They weren't amazing, but it just started the journey. And that's how they got to the point where they got acquired for, I don't think they acquired for a lot of money or anything. It was like an ability to have a story and just continue and to do it and like pick a cadence and stick to it. So like Jamstack Radio specifically did every other week because I wanted an off week to like not have to worry about like getting an episode turned around and shipped and recorded. So because we have an every other week, it like just it shows up in your feed, but you don't know when it's coming. Like you forget when it's coming, and then when it does come, it's here. But it's like a weekly thing. People are like, "Oh man, you missed 2 weeks. What happened? Are you pod fading, or did you quit? Are you guys fighting?" I enjoy Jamstack Radio because I don't have the pressure to. Because I'm a solo host, don't only have someone to fall back on. Ironically, we started with a co-host, and by episode 2, we had 0 co-host. I was a solo host for what I think I'm 124 episodes every other week for the past 7 years, 8 years. So anyway, basically pick a cadence, stick to it, build up a backlog before you ship your first one. So that way you have like expectation. And then like you could also do the episode 0 or whatever, like the intro, because everyone goes back and listens to the first episode. Make that like, hey, this is a podcast about this. I love you to subscribe, blah, 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 do that thing. And then the next episode is the one where you get into it.
I like the every other week thing. Because we do every week, and when we miss one, it's like, fuck. Like, our producers are, like, pissed at us, and then it's like, okay, with this glaring, like, red, like, you didn't make this week, or what, like, yeah. So having some flexibility or getting a bunch done first to where you can, like,
yeah.
If you're going to do weekly but you got 10 ready, then you can kind of, you know. But, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to do, like, make sure you hit it all. But that is really important because people go, oh, it comes out today, and then you missed one. And then they go, oh, well, yeah, this new podcast came out. I'm going to listen to them instead. See you later. So
yeah, and then you get a little bit of continuity or whatever there. Yeah, and I feel like we get rushed into, oh, well, you know, we didn't book a guest or something happened, and now we just have to talk to each other, which just for me, they are less interesting, right?
Yeah, like, we've talked to each other enough.
Yeah, I'm really done talking to you. I'm just talking to Brian here. Don't respond to me anymore. So the more I kind of sip this, I do start to get a little smokiness in the finish. So it's interesting. I don't know if you affected me with your mentions of scotch, but I feel like as it opens up, it starts to get a little smokiness in the finish for me. I don't know.
A little. I think it's like all the good parts of scotch, personally. I didn't have any downsides.
Yeah. No, I don't change my rating based on that, but I just was going to point that out as I have a little bit, as the episode goes on, it's like, oh yeah, this has like changed a little bit. I would be curious what like a couple of drops of water or something else would do to it. So dear listener, still recommended by me. So we could talk about some other things other than these tech things. What are you most excited for in AI? And I know that's still kind of techie, but we can just kind of change from code and change from just like our world is being affected by this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I got the opportunity to like be part of the, like the sort of the launch team for GitHub Copilot. So like I helped the developer relations part of that experience. Everyone was sort of like, oh, is this going to take our jobs or what's happening? Is there a future for developers, or do y'all go low code and start doing like this, I guess, perfect our CSS? I don't know what the fear was, but what I'm getting at is like we've entered the age of, okay, everyone's doing these automation tools to like generate tests or generate comments from our code from comments or whatever. That mostly is working. There's a lot of polish that still needs to happen. But the more interesting part is like the data play. And the folks who are like succeeding are the folks who have their own data models, like SourceGraph. They're using Cody. Cody is like the sort of telling me about a repo, give me a story or whatever. And then Replit has their data model, which started with Ghostwriter, but now like Replit has this whole ecosystem of people who don't like Git, are basically college students who are building scripts. And it's like a massive amount of data that you can generate like explanations in history from. So the underlying technology for that are vector databases. And we're seeing more and more vector DBs get shipped. So Pinecone being one of them. Superbase has shipped theirs like, I think like Friday or Monday or something like that. Chroma is another one. But now we're seeing like the tech under the AI be exposed, and we can now see the expansion. So I think there's always going to be developers, hands down. Like I think we're just going to get paid more because there'll be less of us, which is fine for us. We just have to continue to learn whatever the next thing is. But now what's interesting is that the infrastructure, like when everything went to the cloud, everything changed. Now you had to go learn how to do DevOps, or they didn't call it DevOps then, but now it's like, how do you set your data up so it can be ingested by a vector DB? So you can just ask it questions. So when you have this random recipe store, and you're like, hey, I've got ketchup, pickles, and hamburger buns. Like, what can I make? Oh, hamburgers. But anyway, that's not a great example. But basically, like, you can ask it questions and get better examples than I can give you as a human.
It kind of reminds me of IBM Watson. They had like a recipe thing where you would just give it ingredients and it would spit back some recipe bits at you. So I loved that it would do like sentiment analysis. That stuff was cool.
So being out in the Bay Area, like there were some like ML engineers, UC Berkeley, I used to live like down the street from there. They had a bunch of ML, like AI stuff that people were working on. But like in 2015, it's like, oh, cool. Good luck with that. We'll see if this ever ships. Lo and behold, less than 10 years later, here we go. It shipped. Sort of like the Alexa devices. Well, I probably should have said that out loud. Alexa, turn off.
but have hot headphones on.
But I guess what I'm getting at is like everyone thought it was voice that mattered, but really, what developers want is we just want to type stuff. Like I want to type a question and get an answer. I don't want to talk to my computer. And for folks who need to talk to the computer or want to, like you have that. But I think we figured out the developer experience, and it's. I don't know. When's the last time you guys used Stack Overflow? I feel like I less and less find myself on that.
Less and
that
less.
One. Not often.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ChatGPT as like the new Google is very productive in a lot of ways. If you're like using it smart and feeding it good prompts and all that kind of stuff, it's just so much faster and easier to get to the answers. Because you go to Stack Overflow and you've got all these, even if it's the accepted answer, is it new enough? Is there syntax changes, additions to the spec, and all kinds of things that can make this answer a little different? Or it worked on my machine and then you try the same thing and doesn't work, and okay, now I have to find the next issue and see if that applies. Yeah, there's a lot of like trying to distill all that stuff down and what's garbage and real. Well, I mean, I guess to a degree, ChatGPT is some of that, right? You need to distill and work through some of the bad, but it feels like it's easier to get to the good.
That's what's fascinating, is like this evolution that we're seeing in front of our eyes. And I think in 2 or 3 years from now, we'll be like, oh, that was a weird moment, but I guess I'm wearing my Apple vision now to code. And how could I ever live without these things?
You know, we were at Render last week. I know you were not able to attend. Did you catch any of the talks, though?
I caught the tweets. I did not catch any talks. I ended up booking like a trip to visit some family the same week as Render. And it was like, ironically, I was in Tennessee, so I could have like just drove down and been there. But it was my twin brother. I haven't seen him in years. So figured that was more important than Render. Yeah. But definitely would love to check it out next year. The people I love to hang out with and see, and probably it seems like all the guests on these podcasts were at Render as well. But yeah, no, I didn't catch the content, but I definitely got the FOMO for the event that Justin and team put together. Yeah,
it's intense. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of like simultaneous things going on. So you get, even if you're there, you get some FOMO because you're like, oh crap. Well, there's these four talks at 1 o'clock that I
only go
see
to one.
Which one? And
yeah,
you can only go to one.
I think that the meme was that Render is kind of like a party with some tech talks in it. And when I went 2 years ago, it was basically that. Like, I honestly did not ever hit the bed in the hotel like before 1 a.m. It was just like always a thing that was happening after. And they did a really good job of just like, if you wanted to drop off and go back to the hotel, like that's totally fine and cool. I think it was like right after COVID, 2021. So it would have been after like all the lockdowns and stuff like that. It was like a freeing experience of like, oh, cool. I get to hang out with all the people from the internet. I look forward to seeing what Render turns into in the next couple of years. I truly think it's going to be like South by Southwest in the summertime in Atlanta every year. And that's, I think, what their goal is.
Yeah, I could see that. That makes a lot more sense. And I can see it, whereas it's more of like the festival socialization, like interconnectivity of all these people working in tech. You know, it's segmented in that way. But yeah. And then, oh, by the way, there's some talks if you have time, you want to jump into that. But there's so much happening organically around it, too. So
expect a pizza party next year.
Nice. There we go. Well, now I'm going to book my ticket. Yeah. I wasn't sure.
We'll bring the whiskey.
You got me locked in now. Aside from pizza, do you have any other hobbies?
I play a lot of music. In college, I was like a self-taught engineer, so I was also a self-taught musician. I just like doing stuff. Like, I like learning things. I'll revive my YouTube channel the next, by the time this comes out, I'll have a new video up. But yeah, like the whole YouTube thing. And honestly, I was drinking a lot of whiskey pre-pandemic. It reminds me of when I was at a startup in San Francisco. There was a guy who was an engineer who taught a whiskey class at UC Berkeley. We would buy a bottle together. Like, everyone put in $10 and we'd all like sip whiskey on Fridays. I think it was every other week, kind of, you know, pace ourselves. But I learned a lot about whiskey during then. So yeah, big fan. I was like, super excited for you guys to reach out. Like, yeah, let's whiskey web and whatnot together.
Yeah. much focus on the whatnot, you know, because Robbie, he doesn't know that much.
Yeah, I just use Ember.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of that thing, but it's got a cool hamster.
It does.
Yeah, Ember was actually my first JavaScript framework that I cut my teeth on. Worked at a company in Orlando for like 10 months. This was like the first job after the sales job. Yeah, we explored Ember, implementing Ember into the platform, and we hosted the Ember.js Orlando meetup as well. So yeah, years ago, a long time ago. It feels like forever.
Yeah, yeah, it's been around a while, but it's still holding strong.
The fact that 5 was released is pretty incredible. So goes to show you there's something to it, I guess.
We're about at time here. Is there anything we missed talking about? Anything you'd like to plug before we end?
I guess the only thing I plug is we have a newsletter called, it's a sauce newsletter. So news.opensauce.pizza. Opensauce.pizza is the URL that Open Sauce exists. So would love people to sign up to that because we work hard to disseminate information around open source and would love people to sign up for that. So one day I'll teach people how to Dougie in the future, but for now we're teaching the secret sauce through a newsletter.
It's probably more productive.
Yeah. A little more effort. Like Dougie, I could do with my eyes closed. Newsletter, I have to keep my eyes open and tight.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Thanks everybody for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe, leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time.